Hello and welcome to the InSource podcast. My name is Tracy Melissa Wheaton, and I'm the technology specialist with InSource. I'm joined today by Nancy Sears Perry from Decoding Dyslexia of Indiana, who will share with us the mission of her program and the strides that they've been making in getting people to understand the importance of addressing this learning disability. And Nancy, welcome. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure, truly. So, I mean, I get calls all the time as a technology specialist and as a program specialist here at InSource, all the time about parents saying, you know, my daughter or my son was just diagnosed with dyslexia, and what is dyslexia? I don't even know what that means. Could you maybe fill us in a little bit on what it means to have dyslexia?
Yes, I would love to. According to the International Dyslexia Association, and they are an organization that's over 60 years old, and what they do is dyslexia research, and it's a professional group that many teachers across the world are involved in. And according to them, which I firmly believe as the mother of two dyslexic children, that dyslexia is a specific learning disability that is neurological in origin. And what it looks like educationally is that children have difficulty with reading, with spelling, with written expression, and sometimes with math as well. And what's interesting about dyslexia is that oftentimes I get calls from parents and they will say, but my child can read, so I don't think they are dyslexic. Dyslexics, many of them, most of them, all but a very, very, very small minority do learn to read and learn to read quite well. But we do notice from early on some warning signs that might indicate that a child might have some language difficulties further on.
For instance, what would those indicators be? What would a parent want to look for?
You know, with my sons, I have identical twins. They are both dyslexic. One key indicator is, do you have a family history of struggles with reading or struggles with getting words out or organizing thoughts and ideas?
Okay.
And I have a deep family history of that. So when my sons showed the warning signs of not being able to rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
Even before that, they had delayed speech.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a warning sign.
Okay.
And they were involved in first steps because of those delays in speech.
Okay.
They were in first steps because of issues with crossing the midline. And that tends to be an indicator early on that a child might have future problems with language.
Okay.
And interestingly, as we have done research and as I had an opportunity to study with the Shaywitzes, and they are of the Yale Center for Dyslexia and Creativity. And one interesting thing about dyslexics is that their language processing centers are on both hemispheres of the brain, where in a traditional learner who may not have some of those language difficulties, their language processing centers are on one hemisphere.
Wow.
So just by design, one out of five in our population have learning language centers on both hemispheres.
Wow. Oh, that's fascinating. I had no idea. So it sounds to me as though what I've thought all along to be dyslexia, i.e., reading and seeing letters backwards, turns out it isn't the case at all necessarily.
No, and that tends to be a wide misconception that people have. Now, one thing that may lead to that confusion is dyslexics early on don't always understand sequencing. So it might be a child who doesn't understand that directionality matters or sequence matters. So it's not that they see things backwards. It's that the sequencing doesn't matter to them. And so these also might be children who struggle with retelling a story in order. Because, again, sequence doesn't matter. They might have the details.
Huh.
but sequence doesn't always matter.
Very interesting. Thank you so much for explaining that. That's really helpful. So tell us a little bit about Decoding Dyslexia. I understand, you know, you're a co-founder of the group in Indiana, but I understand there's a number of other groups nationwide. Is that correct?
Yes. Oh, it is a blooming grassroots movement for sure. Indiana joined the movement in February of this past year, and we were the 13th state to join. We are now up to 43 states and counting.
Outstanding.
Yes, and it started in New Jersey with parents beginning to ask questions. New Jersey, as in a lot of states, children who are dyslexic at that time could not be identified, and they were put under the umbrella term of specific learning disability, SLD.
Right.
And in Indiana, in our Article 7, that's what we call children who show these red flags for dyslexia.
Right.
So we put them under this umbrella term, and then we shoot at that umbrella, hoping something sticks. And, you know, a stopped clock is correct twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes things work out, and most often they don't. So New Jersey parents got together and said, you know, we need to start addressing the system at a state level. And it started actually with a conversation on the way home from a LDA conference. And these parents were coming home from New York City to New Jersey, and they said, you know, we should start an organization, a grassroots movement, a loosely connected group of parents who want to see change. And the Decoding Dyslexia movement was born. And from there, it resonated with parents across the country. And people have said, gosh, how can we get one started in our state? Which is what I did. I called the New Jersey. Actually, I emailed the New Jersey group and said, gosh, I've been watching your movement. I'm very interested to get this going in Indiana. What do I do? And so they were very kind to reply. They sent a logo as a possibility. And within a few months, I actually sat on it for 6 months. And then a friend of mine and I launched it in February.
That's amazing. I'm just, wow. It truly is often in the grassroots movement that is responsible for so much change in this country, legislatively, in terms of paradigms, how we learn, how we understand things. And it's exciting to me to hear that this is going on. So you've started the movement, and now what's the movement about? I mean, what is it that you guys are trying to do?
Well, we want to, first of all, raise awareness. People have misconceptions about what dyslexia is, so we would like to set them straight in a kind way.
Right, of course.
But what we would like to dispel some of those myths. Dyslexic children don't see things backwards. They do have a difference in processing. And it isn't a medical diagnosis. It is a medical word that is recognized educationally. So oftentimes schools refer students or families to a pediatrician or a family practice person who doesn't know anything, who then ultimately will refer them back to the school. Because according to the family practice or pediatric person, well, this is an educational diagnosis. But according to the educators, no, it's a medical diagnosis. So, and then you have that circle that we tend to be caught in. That was our family's story.
Oh, wow.
We went to the pediatrician, and I had my research because I am a researcher by nature, and I had my research. I knew my family history. I suspected this was dyslexia. I had been told for several years in asking speech pathologists and occupational therapists that my boys were seeing, could this be dyslexia?
Mm-hmm.
Could we also be seeing that? And, well, no, they're boys. No, they're twins. That's probably what we're seeing.
Hmm.
I finally went to my pediatrician and said, you know, they will always be boys. They will always be twins. They are in second grade now. There's more to this story. Can we figure this out?
Right.
And then he referred me to the local school system.
Oh, man.
And so the local school system did a battery of tests, found out my boys have an SLD.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I said, well, specific learning disability, is that specifically dyslexia?
Yeah, right.
To which they said, well, we can't use that word. That's a medical term. You will need to go to your doctor for that. And I said, well, my doctor sent me here.
Right.
And so then, and my story is the case across the state and actually across the country that these children are caught in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And so they aren't identified early, which they could be and should be.
Mm-hmm.
95% of reading failure is preventable.
Mm-hmm.
We identify early.
Right.
If we don't, we have children who don't pass iRead 3.
Right, exactly.
And then the children are held accountable.
Right. I mean, which is very disturbing.
Yes. And so that's part of what we are wanting to do is educate.
Mm-hmm.
Educate educators, educate legislators, and just see what we can come up with to better meet the needs of our children, which should be first and foremost in any of our goals.
Absolutely. And, you know, just as you kind of describe the circular process of, you know, physician to school, school to physician, at what point does like a neuropsychologist come in and help facilitate that process? I mean, is that who ultimately would be best equipped to make a diagnosis like that? I mean, isn't that what they do?
Actually, an educational psychologist in a school system, if they are trained with what to look for within the tests they already run,
mm-hmm.
they can make that diagnosis if we have a definition within our Article 7 that gives them something to hang their hats on.
Okay. But
right now, what they have to hang their hats on is SLD.
And that's it. Yeah.
And that's it.
I think that's also what like ADHD and other things like that would fall under, correct?
They do.
Yeah. So
it's my understanding.
Everything kind of falls under that umbrella, and it isn't really especially helpful.
No, as does a brain injury.
And oh, so, wow. Really? Yeah,
how you would approach a child with a brain injury would be much different than how you would approach a child who is dyslexic or a child who's ADD or ADHD.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm interested. So, okay. So your goals are then to kind of change up how dyslexia is defined or in Article 7? Is that it? Or
yes. Well, we would like to dispel the myth that dyslexia is rare. It isn't rare at all. It's 1 in 5.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite a bit different than rare. Mm-hmm.
And so when you have 20% of a population that isn't being addressed,
mm-hmm.
we need to start a conversation. And so that's what we want to do, raise awareness, start that conversation. We would like to see that conversation lead to a definition within Article 7 of dyslexia so that teachers who desperately want to help these children who are falling behind, so that they have something to hang their hats on. They have something then that they can justify getting some training.
Mm-hmm.
If a disability doesn't exist, well, how do you get training for it?
Right, exactly. Right.
And so then that will help teachers and help schools be able to justify some of the much needed in-service training. We would also like to see a paradigm shift with how we approach in-service or pre-service teachers
right.
who are in the schools of education.
Right.
And, you know, that's a conversation that's happening across the country with teachers' ed programs changing the way they address how you meet the needs of this 20%, how you identify them, mm-hmm. how you preventatively get in place, what can help them help these children prevent reading failure. And then we also want to see early identification and aggressive remediation.
Right.
And then we would also like to see that there's access to technologies that are in place
mm-hmm.
for all dyslexics who have a special ed designation, have an IEP or 504 plan.
Right.
Also those who don't qualify for those designations.
Mm-hmm. 504.
Or the 504 or the IEP.
Yeah.
Okay. Because by the time you are qualifying for an IEP,
mm-hmm.
there's a pretty significant concern. But
yeah.
what about that child who is able to accommodate and self-remediate and
right.
self advocate enough that they're getting those C's and they're skating by.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So we want to see those needs addressed as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder, and as you're running, and this is fabulous. I'm very excited to hear about this because I think this is a discussion that's way past due.
Yes.
You know, not only for dyslexia, but also for things like head injuries and ADHD and yes. all the other scope of learning disabilities. I mean, if I could tell you how many times I would cope with parents calling frustrated, why can't I get my child an IEP? Why won't they help? Why aren't these people trained in how to help my son with dyslexia? Why aren't these people trained in how to help kids with ADHD? I think just the fact that you're going down the road to try and get things changed up within Article 7 with respect to definitions, things of that nature, will help kind of bring attention to some of those other areas as well.
Yes, and this is the year Article 7 is opened up. I am not sure where they are in the process, but there is awareness that we would like a definition added into Article 7 at this point in time.
Outstanding. So what have you been up to? I mean, this must require a lot of push legislatively, I would think, on your
behalf. It does. It's been such an exciting process. We started off in February. We launched February 23rd. And by the first week in March, we were meeting with our U.S. representatives just to let on the national front our legislators know that you have a group of parents, of voters, who are experiencing concerns within your state. And the reason why we took that approach was there is actually a bipartisan dyslexia caucus on the national level.
Wow.
And so, yes, it's very exciting. And our goal was, we have 9 U.S. representatives.
Right.
And our goal was to meet with all 9 and be the state that has all 9 representatives on board with the caucus.
Wow.
We have met with 5 of the 9,
mm-hmm.
and 3 of those have signed on to the caucus.
Oh, wow.
So, yes. The first, we had a fabulous meeting at Andre Carson's office,
mm-hmm.
and actually his staff waited until the very end of our meeting to let us know that he had already signed on. We had sent him, we have a slide presentation. We had sent him that slide deck with all of our research and information.
Right.
And he and his assistant, his legislative education assistant, had reviewed that and they had signed on to the caucus. And then we went to his office in Indianapolis to have a phone conference with people in D.C.
Oh, wow.
And at the end of that phone conference, the very kind woman at the other end said, well, I have some very good news. Andre Carson has signed on to the caucus. And that was the best meeting to know that, first of all, he was very responsive to those needs. And it would make sense that he would be just based on his history in education, his family's history in education. And there are some exciting pilot programs going on within his district in the Indianapolis Public Schools.
Excellent.
That use a preventative approach to educating children. And so we sent him that information as well. And, of course, he's very excited by that. We then met with Todd Young, who signed on. And he too was fascinated with everything we brought to his attention. People are always shocked by our stories. And then after that, Luke Messer signed on. And he too is very supportive and is always surprised to hear the stories that we have to share.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. And, you know, kudos to you. I mean, this is amazing that in the span of less than a year, you've managed to get all of this accomplished. It's really quite amazing. And I'm sure many parents are grateful for your efforts in this area. Now, speaking of parents, how can parents get involved in this? This is exciting. I mean, I would think we would probably have a lot of parents listening to this podcast who'd like to know how they can help.
Yes, that's a great question. What they can do right now is friend us on Facebook.
Okay.
That's so very important because mm-hmm. we are finding that legislators watch that count.
Mm-hmm.
And they watch the comments and they watch the feedback. We know they're watching just based on conversations we've had at the state level and information they could only get by watching our page. So we know they're watching. They can also follow us on Twitter. We are DDIN 2013. And they can follow us there.
Great.
And again, they watch. People around the state, people around the country are watching. And Indiana is unique. We have an opportunity, even though we're behind right now mm-hmm. in legislation, we have an opportunity to really set the bar and be a model. And I really hope that we can see some bipartisan movement and some cooperation in getting some of these goals for our children met.
That's outstanding. I mean, after all, I mean, dyslexia doesn't choose between Democrat and Republican now, does it?
No, not at all. And if you're in a split house like mine, gosh, what do you do?
I know. Right, exactly. You better get them from both sides of the table, right? Let's see. So is there, I mean, anything else that, I mean, besides the Facebook piece, besides the your calls to action will go on Facebook or go on Twitter, and that will, you will, I suppose, have parents, you know, coming to meetings or writing their congressmen
yes.
or things of that nature.
Exactly. Excellent. Our first call to action right now is everybody has a story. Start writing down your story. Because those stories speak volumes, and we are in the process of collecting those stories so that we can demonstrate at the state level that this is not an isolated issue with a few school systems. This is pervasive across the board. And so if you have a child who perhaps isn't meeting their Dibbles benchmarks mm-hmm. or didn't pass the iRead 3, or you just wonder about,
right?
Then start collecting that story. Schools will not give you the diagnosis of dyslexia currently under our state code. They cannot.
Right.
They can give you the diagnosis of SLD if you meet their criteria and you're far enough behind.
Okay.
So parents need to be aware of that, that currently schools cannot diagnose with dyslexia.
Okay.
They can, however, use the word dyslexia within a case conference. Some schools do, and some schools do not. They interpret not being able to diagnose as not being able to utter the word.
That's strange. You would just think the whole thing here is that dyslexia is being treated as a subset of a specific learning disability. I mean, the set is specific learning disability, under which are all these other kinds of disabilities. In putting together an IEP, you almost have to talk about it because the interventions would be so different than they would be for any other specific learning disability.
That logically makes sense to you and I.
Sure it does. Right.
That, however, is not conventional wisdom currently.
Got it.
It's surprising. As a former teacher myself, that's just very surprising. And this whole issue has been very eye-opening to me. The other thing that we have been very aware of is what's going on across the country. And so we have over 20 states, close to 30 states, with dyslexia legislation either in the works or pending.
Wow.
And Indiana is noticeably missing from that. We have met with one of the state representatives who has been so wonderful and kind to talk to. And he has then had us meet with various leaders at the state legislative level
mm-hmm.
and with the Joint House, Senate, and Education committees.
Mm-hmm.
We are getting such great feedback from those committees, mm-hmm. Particularly the House Education Committee.
That's wonderful.
We met briefly just in a joint meeting. We were introduced to the Senate Education Committee. Mm-hmm. We have not officially met with just them. So I guess if you need me to clarify that, I will.
No. I mean, I think our listeners will understand what you're saying. And I think the amount of progress you're making is just staggering. And it's exciting. And it sounds like you're excited about it. And it sounds like you guys have got a ton of energy behind this. You've got some support. It's growing. There's a movement that's practically national.
Yes.
You know, it sounds to me like people who aren't on board better look out.
Well, and what's so exciting about our leadership team is that, I mean, the level of enthusiasm and competence on our team mm-hmm. it's just fabulous. It's one of those things you're just, this chose me, I didn't choose it, and boy, I'm sure glad it chose me to be involved. We have a former administrator, or she's a retired administrator, who also advocates for students. She's an Orton-Gillingham trained tutor. And for those of you who don't know what Orton-Gillingham is, it is the gold standard for teaching a dyslexic child, and frankly, any child to read. It's very systematic and explicit,
mm-hmm.
and it was developed in the 1920s. By a Dr. Samuel Orton and a linguist by the name of Anna Gillingham. Mm-hmm. Dr. Orton was a neurologist.
Mm-hmm.
Anna Gillingham was a teacher linguist.
Mm-hmm.
And they were noticing that, gosh, these really smart kids aren't learning to read. Why is that? What do we do? And so in the 1920s, early 1930s, they developed this Orton-Gillingham approach. And it has become the gold standard. And it doesn't take you long to do the math and know that this has been around for a very long time. And it's something to consider and look to getting back to in how we approach reading instruction. And so that's one of our members of the leadership team. The other is an on-fire mom who is so eloquent, and she also worked in regulatory for Lilly.
Oh, wow.
Yes. She is a researcher, and wow, is she fabulous to have on a team. And so if there is any piece of data we need, she can find it, and she can put it succinctly, and she just has a way of wording things so that we get responses from legislators and from community organizations that we speak to, and she's just a gift to have and be involved. And the other person involved in the leadership team, she is a former journalism professional.
Oh, great. That's great.
Yes, and she writes a blog about being a warrior mom. And boy, she has a gift for words as well. And some of the blogs that she puts together, well, many of them have gotten national attention. She will write something, put it up, and then next thing you know, you have 25 decoding dyslexia states sharing it.
Wow.
Weighing in and saying, this is my story too.
Wow.
So we're very thankful that she's involved. So the four of us make up the core leadership team.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing we've received comments on as far as our successes so far is that our group that goes and talks to legislators, we're small,
mm-hmm.
we're very well prepared, and we are starting to pave a way for the bigger voice of all of those on Facebook who like us and who follow us on Twitter.
That's wonderful.
So there is method to what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
and we do share how people can be involved in that.
That's outstanding. Nancy, it's been so wonderful having you here today. I've learned so much, not just about dyslexia, and about your movement, but just sort of about that resilience of the human spirit, you know, that when something is wrong, oftentimes it's up to us as parents to be the ones to go in, to change it, to make that change happen for our children.
It sure is. And when I was growing up, I'm a short person. And when I was growing up, the wisdom in my house, two things resonated and were told to me often. One, if it is to be, it is up to me. The power of 10 two-letter words. And the other one is dynamite comes in small packages.
I love it.
Those are the two things that I've carried with me through life. And, you know, I think as parents, it's really important for us, and we need to know it's okay to question a system, and it's okay to question the educators. Even if we don't do it to their face, it is fine for us to inquire about what is best for our children. We must do that as parents. And I think so many parents, especially ones that I talk to, they're fearful of asking questions of their school, or they don't know that they can. So that when it's presented, gosh, I think you need to retain your second grade child because they aren't meeting benchmarks, then the parents don't always know that they have the right to question that,
right,
and ask for research and data that might justify that decision.
Right.
And so it's okay to question. That's how we learn. That's how we know.
Exactly.
And I guess that would be a big encouragement I would give anybody listening is parents know. A mom knows when there's something that needs to be looked into. I knew with my sons, mm-hmm, when they were in preschool. Knowing what I know now, I would have done things much differently as, mm-hmm, far as, you know, you can identify and diagnose a dyslexic very early on in preschool and kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
That's against conventional wisdom. We're oftentimes told by professionals, well, no, you have to wait until third grade,
mm-hmm,
which flies in the face of any research we have on reading, which says the Torgerson study,
mm-hmm,
fascinating study that's come out of Florida. But that study says if you can get a child caught up by second grade, they will stay caught up with their peers. But if you wait until later, say third or fourth grade to, mm-hmm, intervene,
yeah,
it will take a 1-to-4 ratio. One teacher to four children to get that child caught up. And
wow,
at that point in time, you most likely will never have a fluent reader.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. That,
yes,
is so why time is so, so critical. And, you know, and that they're giving these tests, the iReads, at points where, you know, kids are beyond help. You know, if you don't,
right,
pass, it's a little late now.
Yeah, it's certainly... you're reaching that tail end of optimal time,
yeah,
for help.
It's tough.
A dyslexic person at any age can learn to read. Now, with my boys, we didn't get help until much later,
mm-hmm,
than we could have and should have,
mm-hmm,
because I was waiting on the system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in retrospect, I would not do that again.
Yeah.
But they are not at all fluent readers. They are very robotic and very labored.
Mm-hmm.
They, right, read very slowly. They write very slowly. And I have seen that outcome much different in children who have interventions very early.
Well, it's very good to know. And the information you share with us today is invaluable, Nancy. Thank you so much for being with us on the InSource podcast. And please do keep us updated with some of the strides you're making, because I have a feeling it won't be long before you're going to get what you need to get Article 7 changed.
That is our goal. We are very hopeful that they will see the wisdom in making those changes this year, hopefully in an administrative way. Changes are always best when they can happen administratively, and that is certainly a goal. Legislation is certainly a second option, but administrative changes would be the primary goal for us at this time.
Outstanding. Do keep us posted, and thanks again for being on the InSource podcast, Nancy.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks. You've been listening to the InSource podcast. The views expressed on this podcast are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of InSource.